Stone & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 1025. The game, we are live at 3rd and Home out here in Germantown, attached to First Horizon Park. Sounds tonight in action. Get your tickets now. I have one unpopular opinion on the Pecorine night that was last night. And by the way,
you have more than just one unpopular opinion. But
no, not about last night.
On this.
Yeah. I mean, you know when opinions are going to be unpopular. Like, you know. When you say, hey, I don't think Ryan Tannehill can play in the weather in Green Bay, that people are going to get mad, even though he's never been able to play in the weather in New England in the winter. He's never been able to play in the weather in Buffalo in the winter when he was with the Dolphins. But people are going to get mad. You know that. But you got to tell it like it is. And a lot of people have been tweeting me, I compared last night to Kobe's last game when Kobe had 60, and I said it was the national version, and people are like, man, I can't keep agreeing with you. I can't believe I'm agreeing with you. Because that's a popular opinion to have. There's a lot of people that think Pekka should come back or that are talking themselves into the idea that Pekka should come back with the Nashville Predators. I have said I want Pekka to come back. But that's selfish. I want Pekka to come back because I think he's a good player. I want Pekka to come back because I think he's good for the team. And I want Pekka to come back because, let's be honest, he's a better backup goalie than they would probably go out and get. Connor Ingram, maybe, I don't know. But then think about all the recycled guys that just happen to always be backup goalies. Jonathan Bernier, John Gibson, just all these guys are just the Cam Talbots of the world. Like, Pecorine is clearly better than the Carter Huttons. No offense to Carter Hutton. But he's better than all those guys. Anton Khudobin or, Halak in Boston. He's better than all those guys. So I would prefer that they have Pekka instead of that guy. But I don't think Pekka's coming back. And I don't think Pekka's coming back because I don't think Pekka is going to put himself through all the hard work that I guarantee you he puts himself through to be ready for a season in order to play once every 4 or 5 nights. I don't think Pekka's coming back because I think he believes it's time for UC Soros to have the number one job because it's time for him to be out there without the safety blanket of Pecorine behind him, without it being, hey, you know what? If worse comes to worse, Pekka's out there. No, if worse comes to worse, it's you. I think he probably thinks Soros is ready. But I also wonder this. When we talk about Pekka, everybody says he's the greatest player in the history of the franchise. He's the most popular player in the history of the franchise. People are doing the, hey, Mount Rushmore, Pekka, Eddie George, Steve McNair, and whoever else you want to put up there. I don't do Mount Rushmore topics. If you want to do it on your own time. But just remember how things ended with Steve McNair. Do people remember that Steve McNair retired as a Baltimore Raven? Not just he retired as a Raven, like his last game was with the Ravens, but he legitimately retired as a Baltimore Raven. The I am retiring press conference was as a member of the Baltimore Ravens. You want that for Pecorine? Remember the contract dilemma with Eddie George. Eddie George, kind of in a similar spot as Pekka, not playing at the same Eddie George level that he had played at when he became Eddie George of the Tennessee Titans. But the Titans still loved him, and Titan fans still loved Eddie George. But after the Titans made it to the playoffs, and Eddie had a great game with a dislocated shoulder against the Ravens, they lost on the road to the Patriots, and the salary cap was becoming an issue. Eddie didn't want to redo his contract. They had Chris Brown. Eddie George got released. No goodbye press conference for Eddie George. Wasn't last night the way it should end? When you really think about it, when you forget about the here and now, when you think about the future of the franchise, whether or not the Nashville Predators beat the Carolina Hurricanes most likely isn't going to be about whether or not Pecorine plays really, really well. It's going to be about whether or not UC Soros can steal some games. That's what this is going to be. Last year, UC Soros got every start in the playoffs in the bubble. This year, barring an injury, Soros is going to get every start in the Carolina series. Don't you think last night was the way Pekka should go out? Now, I will be honest. I think it would be great. If something were to happen, knock on wood, you hope nothing happens, but if Pecorine had to be thrust back into action and he won you the cup and there you go, yeah, it'd be great. isn't this the way it should end? Like, isn't this how you want to remember Pekka? Isn't this what you want Pekka Knight to be like? Because remember that even if he comes back next year, and again, I hope he does, but I'm realistic, he's probably not going to have a 30-save shutout to wrap up his career. Matt Duchene yesterday was politicking, it kind of felt like, in the post-game press conference for another Pekka send-off night. Here's what he said.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. He's a special guy. He could have zero wins and zero anything as a hockey player, and he's a special person. I think I've played about 100 games here now, and he's one of my favorite teammates I've ever had and just a great person. And, you know, I told him it's going to be awkward when he comes back next year and we do it again in game 82.
I mean, that sounds funny, but let's be real. Pekka's declining. He's not the same player he was 3 years ago. He's not the same player he was 4 years ago when he carried you to a Stanley Cup final. Pekka's probably going to want some money because, well, Pekka's made a lot of money, and normally guys that make a lot of money want to keep making money. Pekka's going to want to play. UC Saros is the clear number one goalie. Isn't this the way he was supposed to go out? I've had older people tell me. Obviously, I'm 31 years old, so I haven't experienced the idea of what it's like to be 75, 80, 85 years old, those kind of things. And I hope to live to be, you know, 100 or whatever, but who knows? But they always tell me, you know, if I'm going to be in a wheelchair and I can't move around and I can't enjoy life and I'm miserable all the time and there have been people that said, you know what, it's just time for me at that point. And I don't know how, you know, I think everybody's different in that regard. And I think the same can be said about this. You know, there are some guys like Jaromír Jágr, they just want to play forever and ever and ever and ever, and then finally someone has to stop giving them jobs and they'll stop playing. But I sit here now, I don't think Pekka's going to come back. I think Pekka has it pretty much mapped out what he wants. But there's a part of me that hears all the people that make these excuses about why they think Pekka should come back. And the only thing, every time I hear this about the reasons why Pekka should come back, it's really more their reasons as to why they want Pekka to come back, not so much why Pekka should come back for Pekka. And I just keep thinking about last night, and I said it when I opened the show. Last night was just as much for the fans as it was for him. Every fan cheering in that building was there to cheer for him, and every single thing he did last night and every save he made, I believe, was for them. Isn't that the way it should go out? Shouldn't it be better than how Steve McNair ended things as a Baltimore Raven? Shouldn't it be better than how Eddie George ended things as a Dallas Cowboy? We can't all be John Elway, win two Super Bowls, and go hang it up, and that's that. But last night was special. Last night felt like Derek Jeter's walk-off hit in New York in his last game with the Yankees. It felt like Kobe Bryant's 60-point performance in his last game with the Lakers. It just felt right last night. And I think if you're Pekka, isn't that how you want the fans to remember you? So again, I want him back. And I know this isn't an unpopular opinion, but it just felt like last night was the right way to go out. And I do think that if I was in Pekka's shoes, that probably would matter to me. That I don't want to play next year and have a final game where we're not going to make the playoffs, the building is not full to the capacity allowed at the time, and I give up four goals and we lose to the San Jose Sharks, I'm not going to like that compared to last night where I'm literally skating around the ice and everybody is cheering my name. Sometimes there's a way to go out, and I think he did it. And so, again, I know that's an unpopular opinion, Caroline, but he did it. And that's where I would just say, hey, that's how I felt about last night. I watched last night say he's not coming back.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I bring it back to a conversation that we had earlier in the week last week. I don't remember what it was, but about Albert Pujols, about how the Angels are not going to renew his contract. And
sure.
It just felt, whenever he left St. Louis, it just felt like, oh, you know, his career is only going to go downhill. Now, if he would have retired after St. Louis was not going to renew his contract, he would have retired a St. Louis legend. He would have been a Cardinals Hall of Famer. He would have been an MLB Hall of Famer first ballot as soon as he was eligible.
Well, but that would have been stupid. That would have been giving away $253 million.
I know. He was making...
I ain't giving away no $250
million. He was making a ton of money, but I mean in the fact of like retiring in, with the team that you've been with.
Yeah, but no one's going to retire like 32.
Well, he was going downhill. Yeah, and that's what again, we've seen with the Angels when he's been there for, what, the past 10 years?
Again, my argument to that is, you know, you don't want to get released in the middle of the season like he got released with the Angels. But, I mean, Albert Pujols was in his prime. Pekka's not. Pekka's 38 years old. He's not in his prime anymore. I mean, this is not, you know, the Pujols thing I think is, honestly, I mean, a really, that's out there, man.
Well, the theory of continuing, I think Pujols was past his prime at that point. So continuing past
wasn't
your prime.
Wasn't he World Series? No, David Freese was World
David
Series MVP.
David Freese World Series MVP.
But didn't he hit like, he had like Babe Ruth level stats in that World Series?
Well, if he was still in his prime, then the St. Louis Cardinals would not have turned him away. And of course his contract was
$250
massive,
million?
And he made a ton of money. But I'm saying to the point of just leaving a team and going to another team.
Man, that's out there. That's a hot take.
I'm not saying that Pecorino and Albert Pujols are the same person, but I'm saying in theory the fact of leaving a
team. Well, yeah,
team
but that's going out where you're the best player in the sport. That would be like Tom Brady walking away right now, but maybe even like Tom Brady walking away after the Falcons Super Bowl comeback. That's a hot take. That is a take, man. That is, and I like hot takes. So there is that. But I mean, again. He's declining. I mean, Pekka's declining. Like, legitimately, right now he's a backup. He's a backup. And I still think he's got a little left in the tank, but I don't want to see him, to your point about Albert Pujols, I don't want to see him like Albert Pujols, where Albert's got nothing in the tank, and it's like, hey, it's a random Friday in May, and we're just going to release you.
And it's sad. It's not how you want to see him go out, and that's the same thing with Pekka. You don't want to see him going out, sitting on the bench an entire season.
615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. So I knew some people weren't going to like it. We'll get your thoughts on that. Plus, there is something that happened last night that I do think is a big deal and worth talking about, and we will get to that next as well. We're live from the wholesaling studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. TriStar Moving. And by the way, let me just stay over there. If Pekka retires to turn down $250 million, we're going to have a talk, because $250 million is $250 million. I don't care how old you are. $250 million.
I would take $250 million. I mean, it doesn't matter how old you are.
Yeah, $250 million is a lot of money. TriStar Moving. You know those guys take great care of you when you move. They're my official movers. In fact, we moved recently, and when I did, I used TriStar Moving because I needed somebody I could rely on. And I'm telling you, you can rely on them. Everything is taken care of. They take all the stress out of moving. And as I've said many times, I hate moving. And I think most people hate moving. But when you roll with TriStar, they take care of everything. They took care of all of my furniture. They take care of both houses. So the house we left and the house we went to, no scratches on the floors, no messes with the door, nothing. It was fantastic. TriStar Moving has a brand new state-of-the-art storage facility located in Mount Juliet. So if you're in need of that, there you go. If you're looking to move, give my friends at TriStar Moving a call, 615-640-1219, or visit their website at nationalmoving.org/radio. They'll give you 5% off your entire move. That's TriStar Moving, 615-640-1219, or visit them nationalmoving.org/radio. TriStar Moving, my official movers.
Trennan down in the left wing corner, pulled up to the half wall by Duchesne. Now Goodbranson feeds it outside. Johansson tipped in front, and the puck is slipped into the net by Matt Duchesne. The Predators take a 2-0 lead.
It goes to Duchesne off to the side of the net, and he does a beautiful walk the dog all the way around Mrazek and puts it in on the back post on the backhand.
I know last night's game didn't count standings-wise, or I guess it did count for the standings, but it did not affect the playoffs or the seeding or anything like that. 2 goals for Matt Duchesne. And let me say this, I think it's a good sign. Ian, I think you said it best. You said you were listening to the Carolina radio a little bit last night, and they were not very happy about Matt Duchesne scoring.
That is correct. They made a mention. Well, it was, to be fair, it was the highlights of their video, the TV. Just rewatched mm-hmm. some of the highlights from the Carolina feed, and they mentioned that was who they did not want to see scoring was Matt Duchesne and Ryan Johansson.
It's like one of those things in baseball where there's a lineup, and there's a guy's like, you know, coming into the ball game, Barry Bonds is 0 for his last 13, and he hasn't hit a home run in 3 weeks. And you're like, okay, now hopefully he will stay how he is now. because we know that guy's not going to be that way for forever. Now, with Duchesne and Johansson, I think a lot of us are worried that they may be that way for forever. But you get those guys going in the playoffs, specifically Duchesne. You get those guys going in the playoffs, it makes it a lot different series. And I wonder if those two goals last night for Duchesne, you know, again, how much do you take away from a series where the outcome or a game where the outcome doesn't really matter that much and neither side is playing anywhere near an NHL full roster? I don't know. You get Matt Duchesne going, we got a totally different series on our hands with Carolina. If all of a sudden, now hold up, Matt Duchesne is starting to put the puck in the net. You saw what he did when he was in Columbus and he had that great walk year. And he, I think, was probably one of the better players in that series where they swept Tampa Bay. And I'm not saying that all of a sudden Matt Duchesne's going to do it. I'm just saying I thought this when they benched him last week, which was they need him. I know everybody's mad at him. I know everybody doesn't like the idea that Matt Duchesne got paid all this money and hasn't done a whole lot. They need him. You can't beat Carolina without him. I mean, the names on that team that Carolina's got, you're not beating them because Rocco Grimaldi. You know, you can do that with Detroit. You're not doing that with Carolina. Let's get to your phone. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Trevor is going to join us. I have a bone to pick, by the way, Trevor. 615-737-1025. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Chris is up next on Pecorine. Thank you for calling the show. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, Jared. Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying about Pekka. You know, I'm in the boat where I just want him to do whatever is going to make him happy. You know, and I wouldn't be surprised whatever he does. But the thing is that, you know, he is one of the fiercest, most fierce competitors you could ever see in the world of sports. And so looking at what he's done, he's had a great career. He's made it to the finals. He's won a Vezina. He's done everything but what? Win a cup. And the thing is that, yes, who would not want to win a cup? And I'm sure he'd be happy if he came back next year or for some off chance they won it this year. But there's probably something in his mind where it's going to be like, you know what? It's not as sweet being a backup goalie and winning a cup. And so I just don't think he's going to be back, you know? And so, but I want him to do whatever's going to make him happy because he's, you know what? He's, as a fan, he's made me happy for over the years that I've been watching him. So that's all I got to say.
You know, some people are just so excited to win a championship that it doesn't matter to them. Thank you for the call. That it doesn't matter to them, you know, how they win it one way or another. But, like, if Derrick Henry, for example, doesn't win a Super Bowl with the Titans, and then Derrick signs a contract to go to Pittsburgh, and he is the backup running back at Pittsburgh, and he gets one carry in the Super Bowl and they win, I'm sure Derrick will be happy, but it probably won't feel the same to Derrick Henry as if Derrick Henry won the Super Bowl. I mean, you know Blaine Gabbert won the Super Bowl last year. So I think there's probably an element of that where, you know, Pekka wanting to complete his career, if they knock off the Winnipeg Jets and they win the Cup and he wins the Vezina that year, there you go. It's all set. You were the man. You did it. And I think the one thing that we keep forgetting about is what he puts himself through. I mean, it's hard making sacrifices, in my opinion. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard to make the sacrifices for any pro athlete. It's really hard to do it at his age and the level of commitment that he's got. So the idea of asking him to sacrifice for less money, the same amount of sacrificing, the same amount of hard work, probably even more hard work because of his age, more hard work, he's got to dedicate himself even more, and then you're going to say, hey, I want you to play like... You know, when we play a Thursday night game and follow it up with a Friday night game, we want you to play that. I don't, you know, it's hard for guys to do. You know, guys like Jay Cutler, they don't want to go be backups. Now, I'm not saying Pekka's Jay Cutler. I'm just saying guys that are starting quarterbacks and have made starting quarterback money, they don't want to go be backups. Now, if you want another shot at it, you think you're in the middle of your career, a la Ryan Tannehill, you'll probably go do it. But my guess is when Aaron is done, wherever Aaron ends up being done, Aaron's not going to hold the clipboard for somebody else. And I don't think we can ask Pekka to do something similar. We'll take a little football breather here. We got a ton of hockey still to get to today. Hal Gill going to join us later on the show. And I will say, I have written down, in my opinion, the top five moments or the top five things Pekka Rinne has accomplished with the Predators. So we'll get to that.
Cool.
But But I've got a bone to pick. I have a bone to pick. Trevor Maddich will join us next, ESPN college football analyst. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I love this time of year as far as football news is concerned, because now that the draft is over, it's like one big story becomes a week-long story. We touched on this yesterday, and I had a college coach reach out to me. Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Your opinion on Tim Tebow going to Jacksonville to be a tight end 9 years after he hasn't played in the NFL tells me all I need to know. If you think this is a good idea or a bad idea, it tells me all I need to know about your football opinion. Now, I value Trevor Maddich's football opinion. So Trevor joins us now, brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters, live from 3rd and Home in Germantown. Trevor, I'm going to ask you, do you like Urban Meyer signing Tim Tebow to play tight end, a position he's never played before?
I am fine with it from a standpoint of trying out. I don't think they'll put him on the team if he doesn't show that he can contribute. But I think he's got a chance to contribute. Oh. He's a great athlete. He's stayed in tremendous shape. They would only use him to do the things that he would do well. And my guess is that he'd be really good on special teams. He'd be a really good move tight end. So they put him at H, they'd move him in motion, put him around, have him block in space, that kind of a thing. Catch a few passes, not necessarily be a big deep threat, but certainly that kind of a mix. The thing he'll have to overcome, though, is that they got a bunch of guys on that roster right now that play tight end in college and in the NFL. And he's coming in, just like you said, being brand new. So he'll have to show that he can perform better than those guys, because the problem that Urban Meyer will have is that everybody on the team will know who the top three tight ends are. And if you create a spot for an H-back / fullback, they'll know who those top four guys are. And if it's clear to them that Tebow is not one of the four that will help them win the most, then before they ever play a football game, the players in that locker room will not trust their new head coach, Urban Meyer. So Meyer, I think, has a chance to have a guy here who can help in the short term. But if he can't better than the other guys, it won't just be, well, gee, we have a guy on the roster that's not that good. It will be a matter of credibility in the locker room.
Oh, Trev, you're killing me.
Yep.
I mean, here's
my thing. Why am I killing you, Jared?
Because I learned everything I need to know about Urban Meyer in the NFL with this news. Like, that taught me all. The guy, he has no idea what he's doing. He thinks I remember when Steve Spurrier and the, you know, was coaching at Washington, and he got Danny Werfel back together, and he got, what was it, Anthony Rydell and Jacquez Green, and he got all his Florida guys. But, hey, at least to their credit, Jacquez Green was a wide receiver in the NFL. Danny Werfel was a quarterback playing quarterback. Urban, I don't know what Urban's thinking. I don't. I mean, this is a joke. And if you're Urban Meyer, you want to go into Jacksonville, and you want people to think that you're not a joke. And the easiest way, it's like, what can I do that can just tarnish any credibility that I have or don't have, because I've never coached in the NFL before, and I'm trying to prove to my roster that I'm not some college ball coach that's going to do something very college-like. And then he goes and signs Tim Tebow to play tight end. Oh, my goodness. If I was a Jacksonville Jaguar today, I'd be embarrassed. If I was a tight end on that team, I'd be embarrassed. I'd be like, oh, my God, my coach. Oh, God, I'm so sorry. He's new. He's new around here. He doesn't. Like, you know, he's my coach. Oh, my goodness, Trevor. Like, Tebow can't catch. They showed, like, some gimmick play today on SportsCenter where Mark Sanchez threw him the ball, and it hit him in the head. He can't catch, and they're going to put him at tight end? Oh, my goodness. Oh, and it's embarrassing, too, Trev. It's embarrassing for Tebow. Like, it was embarrassing when he went to baseball. This is another level of embarrassing. And No,
absolutely not. Because this is a try it and see if it works. And if it works, there's a lot of things that could be good. First of all, I would see your point if Urban Meyer had drafted Justin Fields, quarterback out of Ohio State, rather than Trevor Lawrence, quarterback out of Clemson, with the first pick, sure. Right? because Justin Fields, Ryan Day took over at Ohio State for Urban Meyer. He would know everything there is to know about Justin Fields. And if he's a Buckeye through and through, Day would tell him. He would know everything he needs to know. And he could take his Buckeye and start his Jaguars career with a Buckeye. But he didn't do that. He took the Clemson Tiger. Now, if you have Tim Tebow, if he does make the team, if he can hang on to the bottom of the roster and contribute in some way, you also have the potential of having a roster spot available to you that wouldn't have been, because he could be your third quarterback. He could be your Taysom Hill. He could be the guy that if the starter gets hurt, now all of a sudden you've got the backup is the starter, and if he gets hurt, who's your third quarterback in that game, right? Tebow could at least go in and run some semblance of an offense while you get some other guys coming in to play quarterback for you. So that would save a roster spot if Urban Meyer is inclined to keep three quarterbacks on the team. But it's a roster spot where you've got your third quarterback also covering kickoffs like Taysom Hill, also running the Wildcat like Taysom Hill. And unlike Taysom Hill, he'll be out there blocking at a more regular level on the offense in certain packages. So I think this has the possibility of being completely rational. But it all depends on whether Tim Tebow can go and earn the job, not to the satisfaction of Urban Meyer, but to the satisfaction of those other guys in that locker room. If he can do that, Jared, I see it totally different from you. I don't think it would be nuts. I think it would actually be a pretty darn good move.
I have to be honest with you. You keep saying if he can do this. What makes us think he can do that? He hasn't played football in 9 years. You do realize the last time Tim Tebow played football in the NFL, Floyd Reese was still the senior and football advisor, second in command of the New England Patriots. Like, that
okay,
was a
fair.
Long time ago.
Yeah, that's fair. That is really fair. And that's one of the things he'll just have to overcome. Because if he would have done this earlier in his NFL career when everybody was begging him from afar to move to tight end or move to H-back, and he wouldn't do it. He wanted to play quarterback. And then when that didn't work out, he went off to play baseball. Right? Well, he might be Taysom Hill before Taysom Hill became Taysom Hill, who's the quarterback slash all the rest of it for the New Orleans Saints, and he's still there, and everybody loves him. So, yeah, that is a big detriment right there. That's a big deal, the fact that he hasn't been in the league for so long. So now what do you do? There's another thing that's a problem, and that is that Tim Tebow's a lightning rod. He's very open about his social views, his religious views, and there are a lot of people who don't like that, and that automatically can possibly become a distraction in the locker room, not because he'd do something bad in the locker room, he wouldn't, but because outside people who want to make a point on Tim Tebow's fame might end up creating a problem in there. There's another problem. Is Tim Tebow the biggest personality in the place, or is it going to be your quarterback, Trevor Lawrence? Now, I don't think Trevor Lawrence would have a problem with Tim Tebow or feel threatened by him. He certainly wouldn't be as a quarterback on the field, but as a leader in the locker room. That's one of the things people say about Tebow. Bring him in because he's a great locker room guy. Well, you want your locker room guy to be your quarterback, if at all possible, and everybody else secondary to that. So these are all things where chemistry in that locker room matter, too. But that's why I say if he can do it, Jared, if he can do it, because we don't know if he can do it, but we don't know if Caleb Farley, the first-round draft choice of the Titans, can play with his repaired, surgically repaired back. We don't know if he can do it. We don't know if Dylan Raiden can come in and play offensive line for this team. We have to see it. They have to work out. They have to show that they earn a spot on that team and a spot on the playing time. Tebow's the same way. Tebow's exactly the same way. He has to show that he can earn a spot. And if he can't, then all bets are off. But I'm not saying that he's going to come in and excel. I'm saying that if he can come in and show that he can contribute, there's a lot of reasons why it's a good move. And by the way, if you don't like it, then good. You're a Titans guy. You must love it that the Jaguars would have a guy that you don't think could beat the Titans.
Let me say this. I love it. Let me tell you why I love it. Because I think it shows me that Urban Meyer can't do this job. I mean, I think that it tells me Urban Meyer is not going to be a good NFL head coach. Trevor, put me on record right now. If Urban Meyer does anything in Jacksonville, I mean, if he gets to the playoffs in 5 years in Jacksonville, you can come on the show and just rip my rear end to shreds. I think this – I was very skeptical of Urban Meyer, and you know Urban, and I don't know Urban at all. Urban comes off as the person with the personality of not being easy to get along with. Is that fair?
Urban does things Urban's way, and you will adjust to him. Yes.
Okay. In the NFL, it's not as easy in college as getting everybody to adjust to you. Fair?
Totally true. Yep, okay. Totally fair.
Okay.
Because they're not, in the NFL, they're not, you know, 19-year-old unguided missiles coming straight from high school that think that you're Superman as the head coach of a college football program, and they'll do whatever you say because you say it. In the NFL, you have to convince them that you're right. You can't just say, do it because I say so.
Nick Saban is the greatest college coach in the history of college football. And he had this problem in the NFL, and he had at least coached in the NFL. Urban has never coached in the NFL. So I'm already skeptical of Urban being able to come in and make the jump from college to the pros and act like Urban and get results. And Urban doesn't get to bring in the best roster every year, although he did get the best draft picks this year. Now you go out and you sign Tim Tebow, who hasn't played football in 9 years. That tells me all I need to know about Urban. Like everything that I kind of thought, like I had hypothesized, like I don't think Urban's going to be able to do this job because this ain't college football. Then Urban goes out and signs Tim Tebow. I've seen all I need. Case closed. Move it on. Next docket. Let's go. And so, Trevor, I give you full authority that if Urban Meyer ends up winning in Jacksonville, you can rip my rear end. But I just think this is embarrassing for everybody. I think it's embarrassing for Urban. I think it's embarrassing for Jacksonville. I think it's so embarrassing and beneath Tebow. And I also think it's kind of embarrassing for the NFL. I just think it's bad.
None of those things. No, none of those things, Jared. Urban Meyer, I think, is going to be an outstanding coach in the NFL. He's smart enough to not go rolling in there thinking that he already knows everything he needs to know. Guys like Nick Saban, that Urban Meyer knows. Steve Spurrier, who came into the NFL and did not have a good experience with the Washington football franchise as a professional, he knows him. He knows all these guys that came in and did well and those that didn't. He's going to ask them, you know, what the pitfalls are and what they wish they would have known when they first came in. I don't think he's going to be the same Urban Meyer exactly. But here's the thing, though. Urban Meyer is a master at leadership, and not just top-down leadership, but bottom-up leadership in finding those leaders in the locker room and actually teaching them the techniques of leadership, putting them in seminars, getting them mentors so that they have actual leadership skills, not just a natural leadership knack. Leadership is the biggest thing. Can you get these guys to do the best that they can possibly do? And Urban excels at that. You're talking about Nick Saban going to the Miami Dolphins. Part of the reason he didn't succeed there was because he thought he would have a certain amount of control over the roster. He got there and found out he didn't have what they promised him. And he didn't go well, and he bugged out. He's like, look, if I'm not going to have the ability to do it, the choices, then fine. Steve Spurrier goes to Washington, and we didn't really realize at the time what an utter caustic mess the ownership group was at the time. No head coach would have been successful there, not Steve Spurrier, not anybody, right? And so Spurrier didn't really have much of a chance there. So we look at him as a failure in the NFL, but I look at him now as a guy that never really had a chance in the NFL. Urban Meyer's going to have the chance because he wouldn't have gone to Jacksonville unless they convinced him that he would be the guy in control in the way that Nick Saban and Steve Spurrier thought they would be, but turned out that they weren't.
Oh, my goodness, Trevor. Trevor, I love you. I do.
Yeah.
Oh, I
well,
so
you know
disagree.
What? I'm going to go shopping for a line of belts, 2x4s, a baseball bat with barbed wire wrapped around the end. You can pick it because I'm going to use it.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, if Urban works out in the NFL, I will be stunned. I will be shocked. Oh, my goodness. Trevor Maddich is our guest. Coming up next, there was an important signing in the AFC South that's not Tim Tebow. I want Trevor's thoughts on it, both on kind of the injury front and, you know, the practicality front and how I feel like everybody at ESPN right now seems to be treating the Titans. And a big transfer in the SEC. Henry Toa Toa goes to Alabama. What's Trevor think? That's all coming up next. Trevor Maddich is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. When experience matters. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Trevor Maddich is with us, ESPN college football analyst, brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. When experience matters. Trev, we went over the you know, kind of the splashy signing, Tebow likely in Jacksonville. But the Indianapolis Colts yesterday signed Eric Fisher, the left tackle, former number one overall pick from the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, Fisher tore his Achilles in the AFC Championship game, and that was a big loss for the Chiefs in the Super Bowl that they didn't have either tackle. Now, apparently they say he should be ready to go by September. I want your thoughts on this because I looked at Indianapolis's draft, and I'm not a huge Quiddy Pay fan. And then they drafted Deo Odengbo in the second round out of Vanderbilt. And you're thinking, okay, like they're going to shore up the pass rush, but what about left tackle? They signed Eric Fisher. What do you think about that Achilles injury for a guy that size? You played offensive line for the Colts. What do you think of kind of Indianapolis solving that issue at left tackle?
I think that's a good one because it's a yes or a no. They also signed some other guys, really lesser known guys, to come in and compete. And so if that Achilles does not hold up for Fisher, they still will at least have bodies there. Then they can hopefully address it. Maybe they can get Isaiah Wilson. Who knows? You know, switch him over to the left side. See if he doesn't go to as many crazy parties if he's playing left tackle instead of right.
Sure.
But I think this makes them tremendously better because Anthony Costanzo retiring left a massive gaping hole on that left side. Other than that, the offensive line for the Colts is really good. But the thing about Eric Fisher is if he's healthy, he's an upgrade from Costanzo. He's better at creating holes in the running game. Costanzo would match up with you, doesn't really push you anywhere, whereas Fisher can actually move people better than Costanzo. And he's a fit for the way they like to run their passing offense. I mean, most of the time, you'll have left tackles set back on a pass play, on most pass plays, where he is soft in his set. He'll set back, let the pass rusher come upfield, and then engage him, right? The Colts, more often than not, we'll have the left tackle jump out and engage him right at or near the line of scrimmage, like every pass play is a three-step drop. And Fisher's really good at that. I mean, really good at that. So that's another thing that's really good. So I think that this will be, as long as he can stay healthy, a huge upgrade for the Colts and a reason that the Titans' defenders should really worry about the potential of this offense because if he is healthy and a good fit there at left tackle, this Colts offense has the potential to be one of the better ones in the National Football League.
So how does that Achilles injury affect a guy that size at his age?
You know what? It's a yes or no. It's really pass or fail. If you've got a smaller guy who's quick twitch, who sticks it in the ground and bam, off he goes at a million different angles, then that Achilles could be a problem. But for a guy his size and his age, it's either going to hold together or it's not. He's not going to be that dynamic guy in space that's going to be cutting at a variety of different angles. Everything's going to be pretty much what he expects it to be. Whether it's a run block or a pass block, he's initiating it. Now, he's not responding to it. And when you look at offensive line, even though it's incredibly physical, most of the time the guy on the other side of the ball is trying to get away from him. Engage initially and then get away from him. So that'll help the Achilles too. I would say this, though. Here's where the weakness is. When you watch Eric Fisher against power rushers, he tends to get pushed back into the quarterback more often than he should. He doesn't drop anchor all that well. And bringing in a guy like a Bud Dupree, who's a massive linebacker, right? You've got some size coming off the edges that the Titans can bring. That's the first thing I would do if I were them, is test the Achilles in terms of its strength and test his ability to drop anchor, which he never really has had. And I would make my first move against that guy a power move all the time. And they might not need to go to any other move.
Trevor Maddux is our guest, ESPN college football analyst. Are you a believer in Carson Wentz? Because I watch ESPN, and today, you know, Mike Tannenbaum and Jeff Darlington both picked the Titans to win the AFC South. Mike Greenberg and Berger McFarland picked the Colts. And I'm convinced that the reason people don't like the Titans nationally is they don't believe in Tannehill. I mean, you can code it or say it however you want, but I think it's, I just don't believe in Tannehill. And I don't know, you know, Darlington and Tannenbaum both believe in Tannehill a lot, especially, obviously, Tannenbaum, who, you know, lost his job because Tannehill couldn't stay healthy. Do you buy that Indianapolis has passed the Titans?
No, I do not buy that. I don't buy it at all. I think they're both going to be pretty close, but I think the Titans have a chance to be better next year. Now, they will need to stay healthy, especially at wide receiver. Ferkser at tight end is going to have to really step up and be a weapon because in losing Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith, Tannehill lost about half of his receiving yardage, right? And so some guys are going to have to either step up or at least stay healthy. And then underneath, you're going to have some of those receivers, Robinson, some of those other guys, will have to step up and fill the role as number two and three and be effective at receiver, right? But from the standpoint of this team and the way it's set up, I like the Titans right now, and I like their defense more than most people do. Jared, I think that most people that I've heard talk about why they like the Colts over the Titans, they refer to the Titans' defense, how bad it was last year, and then all the guys they lost in the secondary. But I think in free agency, they brought in enough guys to improve markedly, especially along the front seven. And they've got to stay healthy at corner, but if Caleb Farley at corner can play well right from the start, and if he can stay healthy, these are all big ifs, you might be better at corner with Jenkins on one side and Farley on the other than you were last year with the guys that they ended up letting go. So I like the Titans' defense better than other people do, which is why I like the Titans to win the division. Now, when I say I like the Titans' defense, I don't think it's going to be a brick wall of a defense.
Sure.
All it has to do is improve from heinous to decent, right? And if it can do that, and I think it will, then I think this Titans team can do what it's been doing for the last several years.
Trevor Maddich is our guest. Henry Toa transfers from Tennessee to Alabama. A lot of Tennessee fans seem to be upset about that, this idea you don't transfer to your rival. I hear that, and I say, welcome to 2021, babe. What do you think of Henry Toa leaving Tennessee and going to the arch-rival Alabama Crimson Tide?
Ain't it great for Alabama? I mean, and for all the people that hate Alabama. Alabama is legitimately number one, and they'll probably win the national championship again this year. They are reloading. They're so good, even with all those guys they lost to the NFL, six guys in the first round, for goodness sake. They're still going to have the most talented roster. And now Toa goes there, who's a playmaking linebacker, who will be, you know, Matt, he'll be able to do things at Alabama that he wasn't going to be able to do at Tennessee because of the defensive line in front of him and the secondary behind him. Yeah. And so I think for him it's great. For Saban it's awesome. For Tennessee it's horrible. I mean, horrible. They lose him to Alabama, and he'll probably start there this year. They lost three guys to Oklahoma, who is another team that's probably going to make the playoff and has a chance to win the national championship. And all three will probably start in Oklahoma. And so all this going on with Tennessee, these guys that they were so excited about, Tennessee fans, that are now gone on to not just other teams, but other national championship contenders that could have been wearing orange, right? And that's just horrible. And then you talk about going to the rival. It's the cross-division rival. It's one thing to go to a team in your own conference or even division. This is your cross-division rival. And I will say this, for Tennessee, Alabama is a huge rival, right? How much of a rival for Alabama is Tennessee, Jared?
Oh, I mean, I think that, like, the longtime Alabama fans will always enjoy beating Tennessee. I think if you're, like, a recent Alabama fan, I mean, it's not even – it's like playing Vanderbilt.
Yeah, and so it's like you know, if your girlfriend leaves you and then takes up with your friend, and then she doesn't care if you get a new girlfriend, if you don't get a new girlfriend, she absolutely doesn't care. That's what this is like. It would be one thing if Alabama – felt like they had done something to Tennessee, but Alabama, I don't think, feels like they did anything to Tennessee. Tennessee feels like they're slighted, and they're all alone in that. And that, I think, is the insult added to the injury.
Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst, as presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trev, we will talk next week.
All right. I'll talk to you then, Jared. Thanks, man.
Yep. Trevor Maddich joining us on the program. And I will say this again. Henry Toa transfers from Alabama to Tennessee. Tennessee fans are like, you never transfer to your rival. You mean you wouldn't have taken Jalen Hurts if he had said, hey, I'd like to go to Tennessee? You wouldn't have been okay with that? You weren't okay with, I don't know, Alvin Kamara, who transferred from Alabama to Tennessee? You don't like that now, do you? No, okay. Welcome to 2021, people. 2021, where nobody truly signs with the school. Nobody signs. They don't even sign with the coach. They sign with what I think the coach told me he's going to do for me. And then if he doesn't do it, I'm leaving. And if the coach changes, I'm leaving. And if it's I change and I do, you know, whatever it is. Come on now. I mean, like,
I'm happy for him.
Henry Toa?
Yeah.
He's allowed to do whatever he wants.
He can do whatever he wants, and it gives him the best opportunity to win. And I'm sorry to Volunteer fans that don't want to hear that, but he's a good player, and he deserves to go where he can win.
I mean, I'm just telling you. It gets me every time. Coming up next, Pekka-Rinne last night, maybe, you know, the one of the best maybe send-offs I've ever seen. But with all the success the Predators have had this season, there's one message I took away from last night that the Predators are probably going to have to learn, and I hope it's not the hard way. That's next, Delman and Company, right here at ESPN 102.5 The Game, third and home, where the Sounds kick off their home opener against the Memphis Redbirds tonight. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.